Doors closing. This is Chicago and State.
Welcome to the Nocturnal Journal on 720 WGN. I'm Dave Hoekstra. We're here in the Allstate Showcase studio. We've got a great show tonight. We're going to talk about old man bars. We're going to talk about sea cruises. And we're going to start it off with the great chef, John Hogan. And you brought a great musical guest, Ronzo Cannon.
Yes,
who's
sir.
Part of your Blues, Brews, and Brunch series. So let's start about that. That's this weekend. And
it's every weekend.
Yeah. And how does that start?
Saturday and Sunday mornings. We open at 11. At noon, the music begins. And we've got, the best players in town coming through. So it's the only place that I know of in Chicago where you can actually see a live blues at noon on a Saturday or Sunday morning.
And this is, I should say, this is at River Roast, 315 North LaSalle.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep. LaSalle and the River. What I find unique about it is we're getting a lot of families in, and typically families come to Chicago, and what's Chicago's greatest cultural event is live blues. But they can't take kids to bars to see live blues, but they can bring them for brunch.
And I was over there Thursday just to check out the scene and check out the river view and stuff. And how many people, when did you open, actually?
We opened late July, last summer.
So have you gotten a demographic? How many are locals and how many are tourists?
It's this time of year, it's probably 80 local. But back in the summer when there's a lot of tourists, when the weather's nice, it was probably about 60-40.
Yeah. Okay. And how'd you get the idea for River Roast? And it's roast beef, roasted chicken. Tell me about the
Tony Mantuano, my partner, who's the chef and proprietor at Spiaggio restaurant down the street. And I went to London about 2.5 years ago, and we went to a couple roast houses. And in London, it's somewhat common to go and have a roast pretty much any day of the week. In America, I think we think of roast as that Sunday night dinner thing. So our idea was we're going to bring this back and then reintroduce America to Sunday night dining. Like you're at home, again, a lot of families coming in, share a roast, share some side dishes, and talk about what you did yesterday and maybe what you're going to do tomorrow.
And it's been going okay?
It's been going great.
And what's the difference between that and the brunch menu? I haven't had brunch, but I know you have Robin and Waffles. And
right.
I'm curious about the hangover soup.
Hangover soup.
What's that?
It's kind of a spin on pasole.
Okay.
So what I kind of did is curated the menu to represent some of the regional blues areas of America and their cuisine.
Oh, give us some examples.
So like hangover soup from Tex-Mex, rabbit and waffles from the South instead of chicken and waffles. Then we have like shrimp and grits from the Carolinas. So, and then, of course, some Chicago-style cuisine as well.
Yeah. Now, did you grow up? You must have grown up a blues fan, a music fan.
Huge blues fan.
Tell us about your earliest. We're about the same age.
We are.
Yeah.
I'll be 59 in September, so okay. I'm right behind you.
Yeah.
I grew up in a neighborhood in Lombard, Illinois, and something was in our neighborhood. To this day, two or three of my friends that I grew up with are playing live blues across the country. One in Texas and Houston, Luther and the Healers. He's been doing it for about 35 years in Houston, 310, 21-nighters a year. Richard Kirch, who started when we finished high school, moved to the west side of Chicago because he wanted to learn west side blues. Ended up touring the world with Jimmy Dawkins and later on played with John Lee Hooker up until his last days. So there was some infectious character in our neighborhood that just turned us on to the blues. We'd come down here and talk our way into...
Yeah, did you go to clubs?
Go to Kingston Mines and Wise Fools on Lincoln Avenue when we were underage, and we'd say, you don't get it, man. We got to see Otis Rush. Otis Rush is playing. We have to see him, and they'd let us in.
Yeah.
Back in the 70s, they didn't care. They'd sit you in the corner and say, don't even think about a beer.
Yeah.
So, you know, we got into it at a young age. go down to Maxwell Street on Sunday mornings. Ventured down to the old Checkerboard Lounge a couple times to see Buddy and Junior. And it's just...
they had a great jukebox there, I remember that.
Unbelievable. Yeah, yeah. And it was great once you got in there.
Yeah.
Get out of your car and go in. It was a little intimidating when you're like 22 years old. But yeah. So it's been some part of my life for my whole life. And then when we opened this restaurant, they said, you're going to have brunch Saturday and Sunday. I said to myself, man, if I got to get up every Saturday and Sunday morning, I'm going to have the blues, David. So therefore, I got the blues. And it worked out.
And who do you got coming up? Tell me your booking policy.
We have every Saturday and Sunday different acts. Tarranzo, who's here tonight, plays about once a month.
He'll be there April 18th, I think.
April 14th.
Like 14th. Yeah, right. Uh-huh.
We had Chainsaw DuPont today. Tomorrow's Pete Galanis. Tarranzo's one of the house favorites. Mike Wheeler, who's actually playing with Robert Cray tomorrow night. So I'm really making it a blues weekend.
Wow.
And it's just great players. And more importantly, I was in the rock and roll business back in Naperville when we were talking earlier. And compared to rock musicians, the blues musicians are, they're the real deal. And I'm not knocking my rock and roller friends, but it's, there's something about the camaraderie in the blues community that I didn't see in the rock business back in the 70s.
And I should mention, there's no cover, right?
No cover.
No cover. You could just hang out all day. What's the capacity in there?
I mean, the room seats about 150. We lose a couple of tables to set the band up inside. But once the weather gets nice, we set them up on the river outside, and it's unbelievable. I mean, people come off the architectural tours. They go by and see the band. They come in at brunch. People walking across the bridge. It's a magnet for the restaurant.
And it's the great. Stage is set up. It's like you can – the river's right next to the stage is what I – yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
just north, I guess, would be the state of the river.
Right. Yeah, indoors. Yeah. And then outdoors, yeah. We put them outside on the patio, so yeah. It's great.
Yeah. Now, tell us about your background. I know you're a little bit from Kiefer's,
right?
But I didn't know you were at Kiki's Bistro.
I opened Kiki's.
Yeah, tell me about Kiki's. And
you know, I started wanting to cook in the late 70s. It was a hobby when I was a young man trying to get, you know, some woman to actually like me. Yeah. Which wasn't easy back then. And I started going and working in French restaurants back in the late 70s, early 80s. Went to France in 1983, and when I came back, I said, this is what I'm going to do the rest of my life. So Kiki's was great. That was my first real breakout. I mean, I was Joho sous chef at Everest, and I worked at all the great old French restaurants, Le Perroquet, L'Escargot, Toulouse. But Kiki's is where I really got to cut my teeth.
And then Kiefer's, how long are you at Kiefer's?
13 years.
13 years. Yeah. And I think at Kiefer's, I think it's steaks.
Yeah, it was.
Are you playing that into River Roast at all?
No. We have no steak.
No steak.
No.
Okay.
And I'm back cooking a lot of those kind of Franco dishes that I've known for, like French charcuterie, and we have a snail ravioli, and we do a lot of European-inspired side dishes and appetizers.
I've asked this to several chefs, but do you listen to music when you're in the kitchen?
Absolutely not.
You don't?
I don't.
Really?
Yeah, and I mean, music's a huge part of my life, but I just think it's a distraction for me. It probably isn't because I don't do much anymore. Oop, did I just say that? but for the cooks, I used to have the Latino guys would be playing like ranchero music in the back prep kitchen, and then all of a sudden their foot's on the table, then all of a sudden they're working a lot slower, and it's like I did away with it at Kiefer's, actually.
So when you were more involved in the kitchen, did you just concentrate? I mean,
I was focused
totally
on trying to learn on what I was supposed to be doing.
Yeah,
hone my craft.
Yeah,
I've never worked in a kitchen except for Kiefer's when we opened because the guys brought a radio. I ended up throwing in the garbage because I never did.
Was there music around the house?
Oh yeah, my dad was a huge jazz fan. When he passed away, I got an unbelievable collection of 78s from, like, the 40s. And he was a big jazz fan. He loved to sing. He had a great voice. And he turned me on to music at a very young age.
Where'd you get that accent? You've got a real Chicago accent. We grew up in the western suburbs, but I don't play it like you
I've
do.
I've been working down here for 30 years, so I definitely have a Chicago accent. I can't deny that.
So what would be a real go-to thing at the brunch if people wanted to go tomorrow?
The rabbit and waffles, super popular, biscuits and gravy. And the roasts are also available at brunch. So our roast chicken is off the planet. It's as good as I've ever had or better. All the roasts are great. I mean, we only have 5 main courses, so they better be good, and they are. I like the hangover soup a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you travel, do you pay attention to, like, local cuisine, obviously, but what about local music? Do you check out, like, if you go, down to Clarksdale to check out what's going on?
I was just in the Dominican Republic, and, we stayed at a resort, which I hate, but I always get off the reservation, I call it, which we did, and we went and sampled flavors of local food, they call it, what do they call it? It's not not mariachi like in Mexico. They had a word for it. I forgot the name, but, like three or four piece guys singing and playing different percussion instruments. So we did a little of that. Same with Mexico. If I go down there, I try and get out of town. I don't go to, like, tourist areas typically. I go to smaller markets and then usually hire a driver and just say, take me wherever you want to take me. Take me where you take your mom,
What part of the Dominican were you in?
We were in Punta Cana, which... Okay. It was nice. Beaches were beautiful, which my wife was happy because she loves to be on the beach. But it was kind of captivating. You had to go where they wanted you to go, spend the money where they wanted you to spend it. And I asked for a cab. At the airport, I asked the cab driver, I'm going to give you $100 today, and I'll just give you money every day and take me around. He goes, I can't get on the property. They won't let us in. So they had the Gray Lines bus service. You go for free anywhere on their properties. I said, I want to go to this restaurant over in Bávaro. It's about a 10-minute ride. How much? $45 each way. $90 to go eat a $90, $80 dinner. So I rented a car, drove around.
I was there years ago. It's kind of a wild country to drive in. Some of those back roads are pretty bumpy. We did Puerto Plata all the way down to Santo Domingo.
Oh, yeah. They built a superhighway in the last few years, which ends at the Hard Rock Cafe, by the way. That's where it ends. They built it from Santo Domingo to the Hard Rock. Yeah. But driving, everyone told me how crazy it was, and I didn't see it until we got to Boca Chica, which is a suburb kind of 20 miles outside of San Domingo. All of a sudden, it was like a bad video game, man. There were cars and bikes flying in front of you, cutting through the medians, and it was crazy. And that's what I'm sure people were talking about.
You're a Sox fan, right?
Yes, sir.
You didn't bring back any short stuff. Like, I don't know if you need any. There's all the great short stuffs down there.
I got to tell you, though, one guy they can't stand down there is our old friend Sammy.
Yeah.
He's bad news. Everybody.
Even in the DR.
Everybody that I ask. Robinson Cano, David Ortiz, all these guys have huge foundations for kids down there, and he hasn't done a thing in that country.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I won't be back. I'm sorry. First and last time, Dave.
Do you want to talk? Jason, you want to come over here? Can you just sit in there? Jason books the room. Why don't you just grab that microphone?
Take it away from me.
I know you. And tell me, you book the club, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay, and tell me what your booking policy is.
Well, we really want to get after the guys that represent the Chicago blues sound, Chicago musicians, make the people that live here want to come out for brunch instead of, stay out all night. The ones that didn't stay out all night, we want to come out. And people that come through town, we want them to know what we have here so that they start chasing this sound.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, talk a little bit more about booking, and we're going to have some live music. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
What's the matter with me? I don't have much to say. Daylight sneaking through the window, and I'm here in this cafe. I'm walking to and fro beneath the moon, out to where the trucks are rolling slow. Yes, I'll sit right here on this bank of sand and watch the river flow.
Welcome back to the Nocturnal Journal on 720 WG. And I picked the music. See, River Roast. That's pretty smart, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
So, Toronzo, nice. Thanks for coming down here.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
And I'm really into. I love your Delmark record.
Thank you.
And tell me a little bit about you getting started in the business here in Chicago.
Oh wow. Well, I started late playing. Guitar.
22.
Around 22, 23. Yeah. Picked up an acoustic. My sister bought me, and just started playing reggae at first. Wanted to do that, and then every jam you go to is a blues jam. So I started getting into the blues, which I was already into, but didn't know as a kid. My uncles went down to the Teresa's and everything. But I got my first band organized my first band in 2001, and try not to look back. You know what I mean? Just try to make the gigs and do the right thing, and you know, sing right.
I read about some of the background of Teresa's Basement and Uncle Pee Wee, and we're talking about food. I wanted what you were told about Baldwin's ice cream. I mean, what'd you hear about the neighborhood? I'm really into blues history, you know, and I always like to try to preserve those stories. And what did you hear about all that?
Well, Baldwin's ice cream was right down the street from Teresa's Lounge, and me and my brothers and sisters, we would go down around 9 o'clock because you know you get some of the crack waffle cones or whatever, you know, you get a little discount on them or whatever. And but I run down the end of the block where Teresa's was and kind of look over the banister to, you know, hopefully see my uncle down there, which he probably wasn't down there. But I had always heard about it, you know, at family reunions and kitchen table and all that stuff, you know, how stuff went down in Teresa's, you know.
Did you know some of the cats? I mean, Junior Wells? Did you know some of the people that went?
No.
I mean, did you hear those stories about them?
No, I just said my uncle used to help out Teresa's towards the end. Like, you know, he worked for CTA, and like I do now. he worked for CTA and he used to help her out with, you know, inventory, like liquor and stuff like that if she needed some things. And my other uncle, Ricky, he was kind of like a fix-it guy. He was all-around guy, and he would just help her out with different things.
Now, how'd you decide to get into music? I mean, I read once that maybe you were interested in social work, and left-handed guitar player. Tell me that little path you took.
Well, I couldn't play basketball anymore. So I didn't have dreams to be like a professional player, but, you know, I just couldn't play. And I was sitting around the house and saw a John Cougar video come on.
Really?
You know, heavy acoustic sound. I was like, wow, okay, guitar. And at that time, my sister was taking lessons, you know, piano lessons. So anybody in the house, she wanted to buy an instrument. And I just said I wanted a guitar, you know. And she caught me at that time where, you know, I had her John Cougar. I'm like, okay, yeah. And then it just took off from there.
Really?
Yeah.
And so it was a guitar. And then how'd you start gigging and stuff?
I played with Tommy McCracken, gave me my first gig. And, you know, ran around with him for a couple of years. And then I started playing with Wayne Baker Brooks, Lonnie Brooks' son. That's how I met Dave Forte, the bass player. And, you know, and then, just kind of wanted to get my own stuff together in around 2001. So I got a couple of cats and off the jam scene. And we just kind of, you know, went from there.
We were talking about back in the day, the clubs when we were coming up and stuff. What's work like for young musicians coming up today? I mean, finding live gigs and stuff.
Oh, wow. I'm not sure. Because I guess we're in the same pool. You have to have some kind of personality to, you know, to keep people's interest or whatever. And if the club sees that, you know, you get your first break. Harlem Avenue, Kenny Zimmerman gave me my first gig out there in 2001, June 7th. I don't know why I remember that. But, yeah, he gave me my first gig, and I guess I had something going on. And, I kept at it. And it's been working out pretty cool now.
We've talked to our friend Otis Clay about this, about maybe a diversified sound, you know. Mm. I mean, not just straight-ahead blues and stuff. You incorporate some R&B. I mean, I know you're a big Hendrix guy.
Yeah, I like to freak out, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, as far as you maybe kind of redefining the blues through your own thing, how does that affect you in getting shows and stuff?
Well, I just figure everybody had their heroes. Like, you know, Muddy Waters didn't sound like Son House, anything like that. You know, he was a revolutionary. Not saying I'm in all lines of Muddy Waters, but... You know, they all had the people they admired. And Muddy came and did something different. You know, B.B. King heard something. You know, T-Bone Walker was his guy. So, you know, it's just, you know, you are your influences, basically. So I just like a little bit of everybody, you know.
How do you like playing during the day at brunch and stuff? It's 11 in the morning, not 11 at night.
Yeah. It's cool. I'm like a cat in a new house, you know what I mean? I look around. I don't want to disturb anybody, you know what I mean? You know, I'd like to be loud, but one day I'm going to get the people dancing on the tables.
Okay. That's my goal, man.
All right.
I had a dream about 3 weeks ago. People were dancing on the bar.
Okay, all right.
So we got to get it.
We get them, all right.
Okay, we're going to behave yourself, John.
I will.
Okay. we're gonna take a break for the news, and then we'll be back with a song, right?
Yes.
Okay, thanks, you guys. Don't go away. I'm Nocturnal Journal.
When I leave your house, I'm putting money on the table. See, I bought your things when I wasn't able. I got your things I couldn't pronounce. I don't know what it was, but it was $60 an ounce. I've been your rock in the weary land. I ain't your husband, baby, I'm just a boyfriend. I've been better to you than I've been to myself. I'm the one you call on when there's nobody else. Yes, you do. I pay your mortgage, I can't pay my rent. I can't find you, baby, when my money is spent. On a day when I get paid, see, you pick up your phone right away. Love is a gamble, and I lost. I can't blame nobody, baby, it's all my fault. I've been better to you than I've been to myself. I'm the one you call on when there's nobody else. Oh yeah. And I'm hopeless. I take what you give, and I'm satisfied. Even though I'm living a lie, I've been better to you than I've been to myself. I'm the one you call on when there's nobody else.
That's what I'm talking about.
So
thank you.
Got the blues.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. You know what I mean? It's got new and it's got old in it. It's a combination of tradition and moving forward. You know what I mean?
Yeah. About love lost, the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. Is that, and that's from, is it still out? John the Conqueror?
John the Conqueror.
Delmark Records.
Delmark, still out, yeah.
Okay, okay. Yeah. Introduce the band. I want everybody to get proper credit.
On the drums, we got Milk Chocolate, everybody. Chris Alexander, Mr. Chris Alexander.
Okay.
On the bass from Boston, we got White Chocolate, Mr. Dave Forte. And on the keyboards, we got Mr. Ronnie Hicks. He's just chocolate all over.
And my favorite Cuban boxer was Kid Chocolate. Okay. Back in 1940. there you go. But you know what? We were talking, we were taking a break there. I mean, I was at Malico Records one time with Artie Blues Boy White, and they were talking about you just can't put blues in a glass. It's always evolving and stuff.
Yeah.
It's always. Can you both of you guys talk about that? And Jason, when you go out and find acts and stuff, just talk about where it's going. Sometimes I have beats about the Blues Festival here in Chicago being a little too traditionally booked and stuff. I'd like to see, you know, the Black Keys play the Blues Festival. I like to see the definition of blues stretched out.
Well, I think American music in general, the genres themselves are put out there by people that don't play in most of the settings. Most of the circumstances that create a label for music, it isn't coming from the artist. It's coming from someone who wants to market it / exploit it all the way back to rock and roll. But if you want to talk about Chicago guys that are pushing blues envelopes, Ronnie Baker Brooks.
Yeah, right.
I mean, he's doing a great job of carrying that forward. We have a great Chicago jazz trumpet player, Maurice Brown. that is playing with the Tedeschi Trucks Band, and they're doing something amazing with blues, but Maurice is pushing both ends of that genre. And Taranzo's definitely taking that guitar funk sound to the blues clubs, but not being pigeonholed.
Yeah.
And there's some blues clubs owners and blues musicians that buck that because they're comfortable. But it's got to grow if we're going to reach more people.
Yeah, I've heard that from like the R&B and soul people. It's been tough, and especially on the north side. I mean, the Halsted Street, where maybe it's very tourist driven. People expect to hear a certain sound when they come to Chicago.
Yeah,
so you find that you're only since July, but
yeah, but just following the genre for 45 years, and typically back in the 70s, 80s, it was kind of that Chicago blues sound, and you got guys like Taranzo and a lot of the bands that have been coming through where they explore, like you said, R&B, and a little funk. And I've noticed the thing that really has impressed me with having the Blues Brunch is a lot of these cats are coming in with some younger players, like in their 20s. And my biggest fear 10, 15 years ago with the way music business went, that the blues were going to kind of get fizzled out because all these young musicians wanted to play hip-hop and rock and roll and the punk genre, and you saw a lot of the younger players were moving away from the blues. And now I've seen, like today, Chainsaw DuPont had a 22-year-old kid on drums, and he was awesome.
Yeah.
And so I've seen a lot of younger players coming in with some of the older blues acts in town, which is great.
I'm guessing, I've never interviewed you before, I'm guessing this all came organically for you, Taranzo. I mean, this is just the way it just rolled out for you, right? Stuff you heard. I mean, I didn't know the John Cougar thing. That's great.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're
stuff I didn't know the John Cougar thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, I listened. When I was coming up, you know, I was listening to Chaka Khan and Parliament Funkadelic, and then my brother would bring in albums from Blondie and Devo and all that stuff, and Kaja Gugu and all that, you know. So I heard a bit of everything. You won't hear no Chicago, what they call it. You won't hear no Flock of Seagulls at my show or nothing, or Kaja Gugu, but still, you know, I was raised listening to that.
Yeah.
But I can still gut bucket. You know, I still respect the masters, and I love Hound Dog Taylor, Elmore James,
sure.
Of course, the Muddies and everything like that. But the J.B. Huddles, the cats that really never got like their big due, but they're still, you know, part of Chicago and the Chicago sound. So I can get dirty and gut bucket now, you know.
Now, I know everybody asks you this, but how long you been driving the CTA bus?
Just in case somebody listens. I love CTA. Yeah, no, far too long.
Yeah. Well,
21 years.
21 years.
Yeah.
Where do you have what's your route?
I'm working in Chicago now, 66.
Okay.
So I work anything. I'm on the west
side.
Oh,
you go by my house.
Yeah,
Chicago all the way. Yeah,
all
yeah.
Those uh-oh. Ladies in radio land, man, are gonna be piling on the 66 now, brother.
Yeah, no, they're not. They're gonna get on the bus and pay their fare. I got people to move.
No, I know you get this, but what do you come up with ideas? What do you hear? Do you come up with ideas for songs, lyrics?
I do. I have a little piece of paper always in like paper and pen in my pocket, and I come up with ideas. I see stuff. At red lights, I write down my ideas and I expand on them when I get home.
Wow.
And sometimes I've written whole songs throughout the whole day at red lights.
Really?
Yeah, but I'm stopped and everything. I'm at red lights. You know, I'm not moving.
Do you go all the time? Do you have a certain shift or your day, night?
I call my shift when I hit the alarm clock. That's when my shift starts. So from 4 to 4, 4 a.m. to 4:30.
Wow. Yeah, and you see all kinds of folks.
Yeah, I work 4 days a week. Four days a week. So it allows me to travel a little bit, you know.
Now, do you have any other shows coming up besides
We got Blues on Halsted next Friday, Buddy Guy Sunday, and then we're doing a mini tour in Germany, Belgium, and Holland, 18th to the 31st.
And what's the response
in Germany?
In Europe. I know you've been to Amsterdam.
They dig it. They dig it, yeah.
Might add you're playing at River Rose next Saturday morning. So.
Yeah, that's right. I'm playing at River Rose.
Yeah, we didn't know that. Over there on the
I'm
river.
Yeah. Is it next Saturday? I knew there was an April date, but the next Saturday?
Next Saturday.
14th. Okay. Yeah. See, that was your entry to your
thank
segue
you,
to come in.
For the setup.
Yeah.
But yeah, talking with Taranzo and a couple of the other guys in Europe and Asia are crazy about the blues. I did a little tour of some hotels a couple weeks ago, and I said, the beauty of what we're doing is families coming from Europe and Asia, they can't go to Kings and Mines with their kids, but they can come to River Rose and be turned on to great Chicago iconic culture.
There was a cat a couple of weeks ago
from Norway.
At the table. Yeah.
Yeah. Today we had some people from Spain in. Three people from Spain.
Very cool. Very
so
cool.
Hopefully the concierge are catching on and start and send the family, send the kids, man. Yeah, we got French toast.
So, and when you guys travel, there's a definitely a clear perception of Chicago blues. People know.
Oh yeah, that's the pop of it. You from Chicago? You know, some of my friends, they moved from Chicago to like France and Germany and all that, and they kind of lose their Chicago credibility a little bit because now they live over there. But when you come from Chicago and you get on a plane and they send for you, you know, you catch a drive an hour and a half to get, you know, to come see you because it's an event.
You got four times in Armenia now?
Three times in Armenia in 13 months.
Wow.
Yeah. So
what's the scene like there?
Armenia is like a bunch of unenhanced Kim Kardashians walking around. and they're very, like, culturally, like, you know, they love the culture and the whole thing. But, yeah, I mean, Chris was like, you know, I think he hurt his neck a couple of times.
we're gonna take a break, and we'll be back after the word. You want to do another song when we come out of the break?
Sure.
Okay, we'll be right back. Don't go away on Nocturnal Journal.
On Gut Bucket now. I got a pretty eyed woman, always nice to me. I got a pretty eyed woman, y'all, always nice to me. We're not always together, but she's there when she wanna be. She got a leg so thick, curves that won't quit. She got light brown eyes, high mercy. Watch out, baby, nice creamy thighs. She got long wavy hair, the men stop and stare. Man, she's too much. Hey, Ronnie. But she got an attitude, high mercy. You know what I'm talking about, Jason?
Right.
In a good mood. She just swinging them hips, Lord. And smacking them lips. The man, she's too much. Here we go.
You come in every Saturday night. It's really, really good stuff. It's great. It really is.
See, we can go back and gut bucket like the old timers.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Respecting the elders.
Yeah, you can. It's
build
great.
On it. Build on it. That's what you do.
Yeah. Yeah.
I always want to call Jason Stern Jason Sturch, but
I'll tell you.
Maybe you'll hang around for our next segment on Old Man Bars. But tell me real quick, we got about 5 minutes, about your background with Lincoln Avenue. And
I got lucky enough that I grew up in the bar business in a tavern, a neighborhood tavern on Lincoln Avenue that was right down the block from the best blues on the north side, Wise Fools.
Right.
David Ungerleiter's.
Right, right.
And for a little kid growing up, watching adults have a good time, including Chef Hogan, who would come around, to begin with, to be able to sneak out of my dad's bar to run a football field away and stand outside of Otis Rush playing inside, you know, and Wise Fools had a great window where you could look right into the back of the band and see everybody right playing. So I got to see Lefty Diz. Lefty Diz would visit Sturges on his set breaks.
Was he with Detroit Junior? Those guys used to pal.
Sturges was his sneak spot. He would play with Detroit, but he would sneak down by himself to see us.
Couple pops.
Yeah, exactly. A couple brandies.
That'd be Johnny Paycheck's brother.
But that was a great room. I remember. I think of Sun Seals when I think of that room. I saw Sun Seals there.
Definitely.
I saw Thorogood there. It was a really. We talked about that. Cold night at George Soy. Coco played there, right?
Muddy Waters played there.
Yeah.
My father was bartending at Wise Fools when Muddy was playing for two nights, and my dad still tells a story of just answering the phone to tell him where to park his car and getting a rush before he even came in the club.
So you bring that DNA into this project then.
Definitely.
Yeah. It's a Chicago-centric experience.
Yeah. How'd you hook up with Chef Hogan?
We had mutual friends, and they said that we would do well together. We wound up as the opening crew for Kiefer's,
right,
Chef's place, and our friend Eric said that we would do well together, and we had all the immediate same interests, and then we realized that we had been in the same room together, although I was 10 and he was
23, 4.
12.
Can we talk a little about Tyrone Davis? We were talking about that in the hallway. Did you play his stuff?
I listened to his stuff, and I always wanted to write a song with that kind of groove to it. And
explain to people what kind. I mean, I love Tyrone Davis, so people who don't know, tell us about that groove, that R&B groove he had.
It's like a 2-chord vamp, you know what I mean? And you just run it, and you just like a marching song, and you just, you know, you talk your story over it, you know?
Yeah, right.
And it's about changing my mind, or in my case, keeping it hard in a cold world, you know?
Yeah.
For people you love.
Turn back the hands of time.
Now, I'm going to ask a guilty pleasure. Could you just sing maybe 30 seconds, 45 seconds of a Tyrone tune?
Change my mind.
With Chef Hogan on vocals, and you guys can sing together.
See?
All right.
Yeah. No. Turn a point?
Turning point's fine, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'm not sure I know all the words of it.
But... See?
Make them up.
Right?
It's a turning point of my life.
Yeah.
Well, it's a turning point, baby, of my life. Just being here with you. It's a turning point. Yeah, yeah. It's a turning point.
Go on, Hogan. Moan it, baby.
Of my mind. Yeah, I'm being here with you, everybody. Thank you, Chicago.
Hey!
That's great. Dan, we got our new theme song. We'll dump Tom Waits and we'll have
another baby in 9 months.
Yeah.
Somebody out there will.
So thank you. Thank you so much. This is really, really fun. So let's recap everything. Address, where you can find you guys.
At River Rose Restaurant with Sal in the River, 315 North LaSalle. In the Reed Murdoch building, which turns 100 years old next month, I believe.
Oh, wow.
And Live Blues, Saturday and Sunday brunch. The best players in town, including my man over here, who's become my favorite.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. And it's just great. I mean, it's...
It's a huge space. I mean,
it's a big space, but it's. I think it's a comfortable space for playing music, according to some of the musicians.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
I can't wait to get them back outside, because once they're outside, the whole city hears it.
We had one of our many Sun-Times Goodbyes parties at Fulton on Market when it was there, but I never toured the whole space.
Right.
It's
the whole
huge
block.
You've got private.
Lots of private event space. You can reach out to us at River Rose Shy, which is our website, or our handle. And River Rose Chicago is the website address. Okay. .com.
Well, thank you, John. Thanks for showing me where the dump button is.
Yeah, well, now we know. And go figure, it would be me to teach you.
Yeah, okay. And Toronto, what do you got coming up again?
Next Friday at Blues on Halsted, Saturday at River Roast, and Sunday at Buddy Guy's.
Okay.
And 18th, we're going to Germany.
Okay, well, travel safe. This is really, really fun. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, David.
We're going to talk about Old Men Bars after this.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Excuse me, won't you?
Give us a bottle of your finest champagne, 5 shrimp cocktails, and some bread for my brother.
We have a Dom Perignon 71 at $120.
That'll be fine, pal.
A bottle of white, a bottle of red, perhaps a bottle of rosé.
Welcome back to the Nocturnal Journal on 720 WGN. I'm Dave Hoekstra, and this is our, what do we call this, Off the Eaten Path segment.
Exactly.
Yeah. Daniel Garzinga. And we came up with this a couple weeks ago to talk about old man bars. So we brought in a very illustrious panel. Katrina Arthur, my friend from Archie's.
Hello.
Fourth generation. Archie's in Humboldt Park. Mm-hmm. I should know the address. 2600 West Iowa.
Yep, that's it.
Steve Badoukas.
Badoukas.
Okay, yes. And you're from Bernice's.
Yep, Bernice is my mom. We've been in business 50 years this year.
And you're in Bridgeport. Oh, really?
Yeah.
And in Bridgeport. Give us the address.
3238 South Halsted Street.
And John Hogan, you got a good old man bar story in a minute before we let you go.
Okay.
But how do you define an old man bar? We were talking about this a couple weeks ago.
Right. Well, I should let the old man bar experts, lifers, talk about this a little more. But
Katrina, you go first.
Oh, geez. I don't think we refer to Archie's as an old man bar anymore, pretty much because all the old men moved on, moved out of the neighborhood. I like to refer to us as a neighborhood bar, which is you really don't see nowadays, where there's a community of regulars and friends that hang out there all the time.
Because what happened, the reason I'm interested in Archie's so much as an old man bar is I've lived in the neighborhood now maybe 12 years, okay? And when I moved in, you closed at 7 o'clock. I think you told me once there were like railroad workers and construction workers and stuff. And I was like the young guy with all those old guys, and I always make the joke, now I'm the old man at Archie's and stuff. So in a serious way, I mean, does it reflect the gentrification of the neighborhood for both you guys in Bridgeport?
I would say, at least for us, definitely. I got a lot of students, a lot of young people, and there's a few old men who come in the bar. And old man bar these days, like the last of the few old men who are actually gone and dead, kind of stank, you know. So they kind of smelled like they were on their way out. And but the ones we've got there now, we've got a few guys who are, you know, either a professor or something, you know. So they're sticking around, but it's less and less of an old man bar.
Yeah, our old men are in their 50s. And, you know, we have a very, very young clientele, 25-year-olds, 30-year-olds. I just think one of the reasons is you can say gentrification, but people just don't put down their roots anymore. They move. People move a lot, whether they're in the neighborhood for a year or two and they move out up north and then they come back. It's just you don't see people putting down roots. And when these old men, when their children move away, you know, and they come to time and retire, they move.
A lot of truth to that. And what's interesting, too, the thing that I was talking to Bernice about, she's in her upper 80s, and that's my mom. And basically, like, the regulars, there's, like, what's the difference between days gone by and now? And the fact is regulars, because every day of the week, I have a different set of regulars. Yeah. And I used to have these guys who were the skeleton crew of shots and beers all day, the old guys.
Oh, yeah.
And basically watched each other disappear one by one, you know. And then a few have, and like Katrina said, the people who have grown up, you know, like moved away. I don't know. Some people wise up and stop drinking or, you know, I don't know exactly what. It's like, why does everybody, or do they not make it to there to be an old person anymore because they drink so much? I don't know. It's odd. I can hardly wait to see.
One thing, I've spent time in both of your places. One thing that's charming, and I don't know, this is my perception. I've never inheriting like some of the old man traits to a younger thing. Like, do you still are hams? I don't drink hams, but are hams still $2 a can?
Yep, hams is still $2 a can.
People love that at your place, right?
Oh, yeah, people love it. And, you know, a shameless plug, we do $2 hams 7 days a week and pair it with a shot of Jim Beam for $5, a $5 combo. So. And, you know,
that's where Dan Long and I are going to start hanging out.
I think that's what's got us through the lean years. Mm-hmm. You know, we can talk about how, you know, old style and PBR, their sales went down and you have all these craft drinkers. But, you know, when you get a good deal, people stay around for that.
On the note of hams, we don't carry hams, but we had a guy talk about old man bar. Old Lithuanian guy named John Stoikis, who's a lovely guy. He's long gone, though. But we used to have to keep a case of bottles of hams under the bar for him because he would only drink it warm.
Oh,
and he would drink basically 12 bottles a day and come in every day. And we had to make sure. And if it wasn't there and you handed him a cold one, he'd look like, what is this? I can't drink this.
Now, the trait about your bar I like, and I know all the beer vendors and stuff, we call it Bernice's Buzzer Bar because you still have the buzzer. Tell me the history of the buzzer, and you do stuff to buzz to get in.
Well, we do have to still buzzer. During the 70s, be it the neighborhood and just the times, you know, Vietnam War and such, you know, I was just a kid, but I had brothers in Vietnam, that during those times, all up the strip of Halsted, it was kind of a little bit of a hotbed. It was, you know, be it racial or otherwise, it was just a nervous situation. Everybody put buzzers on their doors. We just never took ours off. It's been on since this probably 1970. And prior to that, though, we have been a bar. Prior to my family, it was a bar since Prohibition time. Because people ask me, "Oh, is this a speakeasy?" I says, "No, but I think it was actually open during the ban in Prohibition during the 20s because it's listed as it was a cigar shop." And then at 1933, it immediately became a bar. Wow. You know.
And Archie's, you opened in 1946, right?
1943.
1943. With your license 177 or something?
Yep, 177. That's our license. My great-grandparents opened it up, Agnes and Stanley. My great-grandmother would work there during the day. And my great-grandfather was a house painter, and he would go to work. And when he'd come home, she'd go upstairs to a little apartment that's attached to the bar, cook him dinner, and then he'd have dinner, and then he'd tend bar till it closed 2 in the morning. And then the next day, dawn would break, and he did the cycle all over again. And that's how they lived their lives. And they raised my grandfather, Archie, in that apartment attached to the bar.
That's another, and I think you've got a living quarters also.
Oh, yeah. Right in the back and above.
I saw Bernice one time come out.
And, oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's another great characteristic of a old man.
Yeah.
Bar, right?
Yeah.
People live, and they don't do that at Betty's, do they? No. we'll get to that in a minute. John Hogan, tell me, you had a great old man bar story about your memory.
My old man. I was telling Dave before the segment earlier, I was not a great kid. I was one of seven. And in the summer, when I was not playing baseball, didn't have a game or something to keep me occupied, my mom would say, "Can you take him to work with you today?" So my dad would go to fix the cash register. That's what he did at a place called Siebens Brewery, which was over on Larrabee, just off of North Avenue. And I have this memory of this unbelievable outdoor patio, but it was a long, straight bar, hardwood, dark, and it was all the old-timers in there. My dad was probably in his 40s at the time, but he knew everyone in there because he fixed the cash register. So we go in there, and I have visions of this Braunschweiger sandwich on rye bread with raw onion, mustard, the size of my head, and a big mug of cold root beer that they brewed there on the property. They brewed their own beer as well, long before Chicago was known as a brewery town. This was probably in the early 60s, and it was just a memory that never left me. I remember seeing all these old coots sitting at that bar, and it was like I was in there 5 times a year maybe, but they're all the same guy, same characters. So that's my old man bar story.
That's awesome. Back in the late 80s, we had a ton of railroad workers that would frequent our bar because we're right down the street from a metro hub, and my grandfather would put on a pot of soup or a stew, chili, and then he'd have lunch meat and rye bread, and people would come and they would have their sandwiches and their beer or two or none at all. And they'd call that their liquid lunch at Archie's.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. We have great fun with Old Man Bar, but, I mean, it's really a sense of community. It really is.
Oh, definitely, and that's why I like using the term neighborhood bar because, well, like you said, Dave, you're the only old man left.
glad to be there. We were also talking about both of you with changes as far as like bringing people in. Like you've got Dan Whitaker tonight, Steve.
Dan Whitaker and the Shinebenders are playing right now. Yeah,
right now. Tell us, they're like country rock,
country band, and they're amazing actually. And I got them in there once a month, and then every Wednesday I have something called Stingo. Which is Steve's bingo. I'm Steve, and it's bingo. Basically, it's bingo, but I like to call it Stingo, and people could win stuff, and it's a fun night. A lot of young people come to it, and they turn it into a party. It's a good time.
Steve and I were talking about this earlier. He gives away a prize during Stingo is a big tub of Utz's cheese balls.
Cheese balls I give away as a prize.
And the funny part was we were laughing about that because we're known for our cheese balls. We have the same ones, and we pass them out to people, if they're nice, of course, because we don't have a kitchen.
Yeah. Now, you had Eddie Krueger on accordion in the 1960s. So there you go.
That's right.
Now you got Dan Whitaker. So things change.
Oh, yeah. That's true. The gentleman actually left when wanted to leave his accordion overnight, and he chained it to our table. All he had to do was lift the table, and it would slide right off. But it didn't matter. But he just wanted to leave it overnight, so he chained it to the table. Yeah.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back. We'll talk more Old Man Bars after this. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Nocturnal Journal on 720. I'm Dave Hoekstra, and we're here with our panel on Old Man Bars and Off the Eaten Path with Daniel Huizinga from Eater Chicago.
Right.
What's the landscape like for Old Man Bars right now?
I mean it's kind of interesting. About the landscape for Old Man Bars specifically, but one of the reasons we started talking, getting on the subject of Old Man Bars here is it's trendy right now for newer restaurateurs or barstaurateurs, if you will, to open bars that have characteristics of old man bars or neighborhood bars or dive bars. So it's kind of it's a little trendy now, like to have like decor characteristics, to have crap beer, like we were talking about Hams. Like a lot of these places will have one or two like on tap or the specials. It's an industry thing to drink this stuff. And depending on how gentrified the neighborhood really is, dive bars or old man bars or neighborhood bars are really starting to get really popular with younger people, with industry, which depends on like how central the neighborhood is or where it is exactly. But I'm sure both of you guys see that a lot in both of your bars.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. But one of the things is like, did you ever think that like your kind of, your bars, old man bars, would become kind of like people would kind of copy what characteristics of your bars in newer bars? Did you think that would happen ever?
I could see it happen. I'd never imagined that would ever happen, but I could see it happening, you know. But more and more, even what the bars evolved into right now surprises me. The young people that come in, it surprises me, and I'm glad. It, you know, 17 years ago, Dad passed away. I took over the bar. I sat in the bar for a couple of years with literally three old men, and a sane person would have shut it down. But I just said, how can I make this better, and trying to grow from there, but not ruin it. You know, leave the, like you said, the landscape of the room in a way. Let me leave this room and still make it better. And I've managed to do a few things, so I'm happy about it. I could see it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I've noticed that too. When I first started working there almost 8 years ago, we had seven or eight beers. We had Bud Light, Miller Light,
yep.
Old Style, and now we have like 40 beers.
Yep.
And, you know, our highest...
Same thing with us. Same thing.
And we have a couple $6 beers, a couple $7 beers. And my mom, Debbie, who is an amazing person, and I've learned a lot from her from this business. She's just, her mind is boggled half the time. She's like, I can't believe someone's going to sit down and like, tell me why someone's going to spend $8 for this shot of whiskey instead of $3 for Jim Beam. And we were lucky to get some really nice fancy beers in from Goose Island or Half Acre. And we're selling them at, you know, $15, $20 a bottle. And we had a bottle from Goose Island that was, we sold for $30. And my mom's like, this is crazy. No one's going to buy it. And there you go. It sells out. You know, it shows you how much it's changed.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, too. Like, what have you both, like, what have you started serving more of, like, and how much of the sales to your bar is these, you know, fancier beers compared to
Well, for instance, the term IPA, I had no idea. Personally, I'm not a beer drinker. I never have been. I drink tequila. over the years, and then somebody started, you have any IPAs, and I'm like, what are you talking about, you know? And then slowly, now I carry 5 IPAs or 6 IPAs, and they cost, and people demand their particular IPAs or the hoppier beers where I taste the, I have tasted every one of them, but where I taste a hoppy beer and I'm like,
it's
you
like know? Sucking on a pine cone.
Give me
some
a,
days.
Give me an old style. You know, so, yeah. A little bit.
It's great. Yeah. Everybody needs to do that.
We we do a fair number, or a fair percentage of our business is craft beers, but Hams does reign supreme. I have this little joke that we're the Hams Queen of Chicago. We sold over 50,000 cans these last 2 years, and it just boggles my mind. I mean, I think people are just looking for value, too.
Well, young people drink more than old men, don't they, generally?
Nowadays, yes, but in the heyday, I remember as a young kid, there's some of these old men, and I'm just looking at my grandfather, and I'm like, wow, like, I didn't know that person could drink that much vodka.
I know some guys in their 40s, though, and I look at them, and I'm like, and these guys are some serious drinkers, and they slowly start drinking faster and faster as the night goes on, and I'm very impressed. And I'm like, dang, one young person that could keep up with these guys. No way, no how, you know.
Yeah. But, yeah, when Daniel and I were talking about this, I mean, this city has so many great, like, real old men or, you know, neighborhood bars like you guys, and what gets me is, like, somebody new trying to open a new old man bar. I don't get it.
Well, I think the core of the matter is character.
Yeah.
And as we talk about neighborhoods and people's changing, and, you know, part of that change that doesn't exist anymore, the circumstance that doesn't exist, is the factories that the bars were fed the employees from.
Definitely. Yep. Like how the Metro rail yards just
we
to feed
had
our customers.
The stockyards were 1 mile away from 1 mile south from where my bar is.
And that would justify staying open
gone.
For three shifts worth of drinkers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because most people really can only drink for about 8 hours before you don't want to watch them do it anymore.
And,
but the bar itself develops character from the people that frequent it.
Oh, definitely.
Right. And, you know, I think young drinkers, some of them don't want to drink at Tropical Rainforest Cafe or Thank God It's Tuesday or whatever the chain is. They want to go somewhere that's dark, not necessarily in lighting, but, you know, it's got some character to it, but some real life.
Well, when we were kids, you'd play baseball out in the street, and then when, you know, you go to school, you go to college, and you come back with a job, there's no community center for 22-year-olds. You know, so you
which
go to the
why they drink Malort, right? They're looking for character, even though they're not finding the right place.
Well, you know, years ago too, like the old men. That's one thing you got to remember. The old men were not afraid to drink in the morning.
Oh gosh,
you know,
no.
We're not afraid to drink at lunchtime. You know, things have changed. Society has changed.
Unfortunately for our business, yes.
Yes.
Tell us about Sturges for people who don't know, Jason.
Sturges opened in 1971 in the 2200 block of Lincoln.
And that strip was a lot different.
There was a community of taverns on that one block, and they all got lucky because three hospitals in a row opened in that two-block stretch. Grant Hospital, Children's Memorial Hospital was the biggest project, Augustana Hospital. And so the same group of construction workers drank at lunch and maybe even earlier in our place for 10 straight years. And that built the foundation for a bunch of younger 20-year-old kids to grow into a 40-year-old old man bar. So, and with a lot of character.
I feel the same way. I feel very lucky with my opportunity at Archie's. I've only been there for 8 years, but I have all of that history that my grandfather, my great-grandfather, and my mom have left me, where people walk in and they're like, wow, this feels like my living room or
totally.
My grandfather's
felt at home.
Basement.
You felt like you were at home. People knew everybody. Everybody felt welcome. You're in my house. And that's how I've, over the years, too, when somebody puts their feet up on a stool, I say, Would you do that at my house, you know? Yeah. And then over the years, people have said, how do you keep the bad clientele out? I said, how do you keep them out of your house? You make them feel unwelcome.
Definitely. And what's really nice is our regulars, our normal crowd, you know, when people, you know, are just passing through and they act differently, and that's nothing wrong with that, but it's not how, you know, you just cause a scene or something, and the regulars kind of police it in a way because they like to have their quiet environment. They've said to me, like, Katrina, this is my bar too. This is where I come when I have a bad day or good day.
It's their place.
Exactly.
Really.
We got to take a break for the news. You guys want to hang around a little bit? We got another guest coming in, but we'll just, you know, just talk about stuff. So don't go away. More Nocturnal General after this.
Now it's time to head out on the road and grab a slice of Americana. It's the Nocturnal Journey on 720 WGN.
Oh,
Welcome back to the Nocturnal Journal on 720 WGN. We're going to get back to old man bars in a minute, but we're here with Will Binnington, who has the most fun job in the world. You shoot music, photography for all these cruises for Six Man? Is it mostly Six Man?
Yeah, that's my main client.
Okay, tell me how that all started. You just got off the Kid Rock cruise, right?
So literally 24 hours ago, just about, I was in the Caribbean. I got to say, we booked this months ago. I'm so glad it warmed up here in Chicago today, because otherwise people might have been hating me even more. For the last 3 weeks, I've been photographing Six Man's rock and roll cruises in the Caribbean. Most recently, as you mentioned yesterday, the Kid Rock Chillin' the Most cruise ended. Before that, we did the band 311, who was big in the 90s. We did Train. Joe Bonamassa, the blues artist, just did a Keeping the Blues Alive cruise. Those were the last four that I did just in the last 3 weeks.
And when did you start doing this? How long?
So it's actually been 8 years, ridiculously enough, for Six Man. It's this company out of Atlanta. They started 15 years ago with the band Sister Hazel doing the Rock Boat. And they created this idea. They basically said, the guy who started, Andy Levine, a brilliant guy, started it. He said, how can we treat our fans, our biggest fans, how can we treat them special? What can we do for them? And 15 years ago, they started this thing called the Rock Boat. They said, let's take our biggest fans on a cruise ship. And the band said, are you crazy? You're going to have us stuck on a cruise ship with our craziest fans? And here we are 15 years later. We do 12 of these a year with everybody from Kid Rock, 311, Kiss.
Yeah, that's
does the one you did.
Yeah, right.
You know, and Lynyrd Skynyrd did one for 8 years. Lyle Lovett does a singer-songwriter one called the Que Amo. And it's really one of the coolest things you could ever do as a music fan and as a band even. Bands love it because while they think, oh, we're trapped on a boat with our biggest fans, they realize that most of these fans get it. And they realize you're on vacation and all of a sudden you're laying by the pool and Kid Rock's 20 feet from you. You're at the buffet and Lyle Lovett or John Prine is walking through the buffet. It's ridiculous.
How many do you think you've done? How many ballpark? How many cruises have you been on?
Again, absolutely insane. And if you had told me, I did a cruise when I was 21 with my parents and grandparents. We crossed the Atlantic on the QE2. It was the worst family vacation a human could ever take. It was a cross between the Golden Girls and a perfect storm. We crossed the Atlantic and no land for 6 days. I said, I'm never going on a boat again. Since then, since I was 21, I got in with Six Man in 2007. I did three boats before that with them. But this was my 71st cruise.
71st
cruise. Just the other day. I've done over 310 days at sea. So my goal is to get to a full year.
You probably need an assistant by now, don't you?
That's a rumor.
I'm really not that busy. That sounds fantastic.
It's not a bad, you know, it's we went to Jamaica with 311. We went to Cozumel with Kid Rock. And it's awesome. It's what's cool about it is you get to see these bands, your favorite band, they play on the boat. So Six Man, the other thing that Six Man does that's unique in the cruise industry for rock and roll is they require that the bands are on the boat 50% more of the time. Dave Matthews used to do a cruise, as I just did quote marks in the air that nobody can see. Dave Matthews used to do one, but he was never on the boat. We required that the band's on the boat. And what's unique is you get to see them in their unique environment.
On? I remember the Kiss cruise that we were on. I mean, and it was great. They had like a Q&A afterwards, I think with their manager, how we can improve this. It was their first one. And there was some talk about maybe Gene didn't leave his cabin all that much. But it's important for them to meet and greet and mingle with the fans. Right?
And as we've done each boat is uniquely different each year. They start out where the bands are nervous because, again, you're locked. You know, and some of the boats, we they're all Caribbean, which is beautiful this time of year and quite amazing compared to Chicago. They require that the bands do stuff. But some, you know, and Kiss is one of the biggest bands in the world. Also, you know, a guy like Kid Rock, you can kind of maybe get around where you're like, I think that's Kid Rock, but I'm not sure. Gene Simmons, Paul Stanley, you know it's them.
Yeah.
As we've done it more and more, we just did, I think, the fifth Kiss cruise.
It was 5 years.
Okay. We're sailing again this next fall with them. Same thing. as they've gotten more comfortable with it. Also, as the fans, something like 60% come back year after year. So as they've gotten to know the bands and see them year after year, they're a little more relaxed. And all of a sudden, you know, we do a pick throwing contest with Gene Simmons. Paul Stanley judged the belly flop contest. You know, and that's what makes it awesome is each year. And I got to say, as a photographer, to be able to document, you know, Six Man really prides itself. And sixman.net is the website. If you want to look up the 10 to 12 cruises we do a year, they really pride themselves on, we want to provide a memory and an experience that you can't get anywhere else. And like I said, Andy Levine, one of his biggest things with Six Man is, he really pleads people almost. When you see Gene Simmons or Kid Rock or, you know, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Lyle Lovett, don't get a selfie with them. And that's a huge thing. Now there's so many, everyone, I'm sitting here in the studio holding my camera. Everyone has a camera. Don't do it. Resist the urge to get that. He really pleads that, say, instead go up and shake their hand and say thank you. And he says, you will have a better experience. And we've seen it. And that's what's cool.
Yeah. Have you ever gotten sick on a cruise?
No comment. Joe Bonamassa's the Keeping the Blues Alive cruise, which we just did. Robert Randolph was on there. John Hyatt was on there. Phenomenal lineup. Robin Ford was one of the rockiest ones we've done in a long time. One of the things we do that's unique on some of these boats is we do a photo with the band, where like on Joe Bonamassa's cruise, every person on the boat got a photo with it.
I think I got a kiss photo.
You did. And it takes about 5 hours with the band and every 3,000 fans on the boat. Joe Bonamassa got sick, actually, in the photo. It was a little rocky.
I was on a blues cruise once, and I was a big Bobby Blue Bland fan, and he got seasick. Yeah. He told me, I was talking, he said he'd never do a cruise again because he got really sick.
It's, you know, we have certain things, you know, do some potato chips, some ginger, some drama. The wristbands, they work.
Daniel, how's the what's the status of, what do you know about like food on cruise ships right now?
It's interesting. But as far as the celebrities, they're doing a Top Chef cruise these days, which is interesting. So all these like former contestants on the show Top Chef are doing a cruise, which is kind of like, for a lot of food people, it's akin to being on a cruise with Kiss, like for a week. Being on with like all these guys or girls or chefs, it's interesting. But here also, like, there's a lot in Chicago too. Like during the summer on the lake here, I did 3 craft beer cruises last summer alone.
Really?
Right here on the lake. Yeah, there was a Blue Moon with the owner of Blue Moon was on the boat, and the guy you're seeing the commercials like with all those like watercolor themed commercials that they're doing. They did one with him. They did a Lagunitas cruise on the lake last year too. I mean, it's not the Caribbean, but you know, it's definitely nicer, at least here in the summer.
I'm seeing an Archie's Hams cruise down the Chicago River or something.
That would be a sight to see for sure.
I wanted to ask you, Will. He mentioned that. What about did you do the Turner Classic Movies?
We did.
That cruise like?
Well, and that's a fun thing that we've branched out a little bit. We actually just did Train. The band Train just did a Sail Across the Sun wine and food cruise. So there were a bunch of bands. Last year, John Oates was on it from Hall & Oates. But they also had Chef Ryan Scott and a couple other chefs. So we've even kind of branched into that. But we did do, I did 2 years of the Turner Classic
Movies. What's that like? I mean,
again,
it's not like the Kiss Cruise.
Not like the Kiss Cruise. Add about 30 years to the age.
Yeah.
Average age was, I think, about 72 on the Turner Classic Movies. But it actually, and again, as a photographer, was one of my favorites. The first year we did it, Ernest Borgnine was on the boat. Tippi Hedren did the boat with us. Wink Martindale was on there 1 year.
They could have called this the old man cruise.
Alex Trebek was on the boat 1 year. And so one is, it's really cool. The second year we did, Mickey Rooney was on the boat. So apparently we don't have good luck with, we get them right before they go. Because Ernest Borgnine passed away, unfortunately, the year after. And then Mickey Rooney. But it's fascinating. What you do is basically, again, you're on the boat. Debbie Reynolds did it. All kinds of stars. And it was awesome because Robert Osborne led a lot of the questioning. And they would do Q&As and and talks, and then you would, you know, so you're seeing Tippi Hedren, and then all of a sudden you're watching the birds.
Yeah.
I still do have issues with we watched the Poseidon Adventure.
Did you really? They actually
oh, man.
Oh, that's a great
that's
movie.
Rough.
Yeah, but not yeah. really when you're on a cruise ship yeah. in the middle of the Caribbean.
Of course.
Watching airport while you're in a plane. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, luckily we still, Six Man still works with it, and it's a phenomenal, TCM does a phenomenal job. I haven't done it in a couple of years, and I'm glad because one day they're going to show Titanic, and I just really don't want to watch that.
I really think you've got the greatest job in the world, but I've seen you. You work really hard. I mean, that, I don't know how long that Kiss Cruise was, but I hardly ever saw you. I saw you on that little island we went to and stuff, but you really, they really put you to work on that. You're not laying by the pool.
Just no, no. Yet. Unfortunately, it's funny, and again, my assistant here to my right.
Yes, Steve Podolskis.
You know, everybody offers to be my assistant, and then they hear that, you know, it is 12 to 14 hours, and Six Man, we really, you know, there's so much behind the scenes of making sure everybody's cabin is right. I mean, Six Man is the Live Nation of putting, there's the C3, which promotes, you know, we book the guests, we book the bands, we book the events, you know, so there's Flip Cup with, you know, insert band name here.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of fun, but it is a lot of work. And everyone on our team, we have about 50 people who work on the boat who are the production crew. And it's I mean, I work probably 12 to 14 hours a day. But every time, like I said, every time I want to complain, especially in February, to my friends in Chicago, they go, Will, you're on a cruise ship in the Caribbean photographing some of the biggest rock bands in the world. Shut up.
Shut up. Yeah.
Now, there's a season. You're kind of wound down now, right?
Yeah, we're done. Yeah. We're done now. We have three cruises in the fall. We start back up with Kiss on Halloween. They've kind of locked in the boat. It's the Norwegian Pearl. Kiss has basically said Halloween every year. We're doing a cruise. So we start back up in November. And until then, I'm going to be watching, hopefully, the Cubs play at a half-empty Wrigley.
And that's what we're going to talk about right when we get back after this break. We'll talk about Wrigleyville and Old Man Bars up there, and we'll just segue it. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Nocturnal Journal on 720 WGN. I'm Dave Hoekstra, and we're with Will Byington, great photographer. You're always smiling. We're both Cub fans, but you smile a lot more than I do. Now, the one thing about Wrigleyville and Bridgeport and stuff, I think Bridgeport has more really good neighborhood bars now than the Cubs have. Can you just talk about, you live up there, you've seen the neighborhood. I think Nisei Lounge is probably the only good old man bar, neighborhood bar.
No, I'll say I'm torn. I've lived in Wrigleyville. I live in one of the rooftops. And one of my brags is that when I moved in on my lease, my front door is 461 feet from home plate. And right now my view is great because the bleachers are nowhere near being done. and they keep saying they're going to be done. Latest I heard, I think it was May.
Yeah,
but June. Right field, they're saying June. And it's great. I hope right field, which I live across from, is not done until like September, because I can sit on my couch and I could watch a game.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing. In 10 years, I've seen it change.
Yeah.
For good and bad. And you are right. A lot of the bars, you know, it's tough. Nisei is pretty phenomenal. I do love Murphy's. Murphy's right there is still, Beth, don't hate me. It's kind of an old man bar right there. It really, you can walk in there. They know you by name.
That's true.
The staff is awesome at Murphy's. And I love Murphy's. Bernie's is also right there. Those are probably, you know, they're still pretty classic.
I think it's cheaper to drink around in Bridgeport.
Oh, it's way cheaper to drink. I think.
I don't go that far.
Yeah. I really don't. And just by quantity alone, you know, Wrigleyville blows us away with bars, how many, but as far as how many of you're looking for, like a nice little bar that's, you feel like you're home and you could go to a game.
A lot of trends hit Wrigleyville first.
Yeah.
Not always for the better.
Yeah. But I love going to your bar, you know, after a game.
Thank you.
It's just very, very...
Love having you. Yeah. Love having you.
There's a couple of authentic taverns in Wrigleyville that need to get mentioned, though. Joe's on Broadway and Addison, classic, authentic old man bar. Jacqueline's, Broadway and Roscoe, same neighborhood tavern concept. Gotta be mentioned.
I know Joe's. Do they have live music at Joe's? Didn't they used to have this country music once in a while?
It's
they have karaoke,
small.
I think.
Yeah, karaoke. Do they? Yeah. Well, Daniel, what are some of the other characteristics before we wrap this up on Old Man? Pinball, shuffleboard. I love the dogs.
Oh,
Are dogs part of, I know dogs are your
dogs friend. Are a big part of Archie's culture. My grandfather, 25 years ago, had two dogs that sat up on the top of the stairs in front of his apartment, and they were good. They sat and they stayed all day. And we allow our customers to bring in their dogs as long as they're friendly. We don't serve food. We don't have a kitchen. Everything's in bottles and cans. So, you know, thankfully, they're able to stay. And it's nice. It's like we were saying earlier, an extension of the living room, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and like peanuts too, like those kinds of peanuts on the floor, the peanut shells on the floor, like what Pippin's around not far from here is one of those. You know, board games are always like fun.
Free pool.
Yeah, free pool.
You don't really see that in newer bars nowadays.
Yeah, yeah, or like just a tiny TV that's kind of like just always flickering on and off. Like what Moe's Tavern, The Simpsons, was the home of the smallest big screen TV in the world or something
that's
like
true.
That.
It's that's
like,
true.
Like one of those things. Yeah, it's kind of it's where you go to hang out with people, and you don't worry about the amenities. Really, you go to connect with people.
And that's what I miss when everyone brings out their phones, and I know I'm guilty of it too. All my regulars can attest to that. Where we pull out our phones and check whatever everybody else is saying on Facebook. I miss the times where people would just sit and talk to each other, and then we'd find these crazy little connections. And right before I came on tonight, I posted it on Facebook, and my friend Melissa was like, "Oh, don't forget to tell Steve from Bernice's that I say hi."
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's such a small world.
Yeah.
And when you put the cell phones down, which I need to do myself, you'll be able to find out a lot more about people and what connects us in that very small way.
Is there a classic old man drink, like old granddad whiskey, or is there?
No, it's hams and beam for the new crowd. I know my grandfather used to drink B&B by the pint glass back in the day. He was a tall man.
Uh-huh. Same thing in your bar, Steve?
Well, by me, it's a PBR and Evan Williams. I call it the special, and it's $5, and it's trendy. People like it. You know, rich or poor, they like it. They could get drunk on that.
Now, Will, do you hang out after the games? I mean, now Joe Madden says he's going to go to the Cubby Bear after the games. I know those guys, but we got to change that.
Another neighborhood bar, I'll say, is you have to do branch out. And that's where a lot of the bars right around Wrigley, you're kind of like, really? You're going there? Cubby Bear?
Right.
And I love the Cubby Bear. But, you know, Tunes, just a little bit farther. Yeah, everything you just mentioned, Tunes, a little bit farther over on Southport. Danny Beck does some of the best wings in the city. They have shuffleboard. It's great. Joe Madden, open invite to come to my porch. So we've started over the last couple of years. I used to always go to the bars. And over the last couple of years, I said, I'm not going to live here forever. Let's enjoy this. And so I've started where we just go get a case, and it's cheaper to get a case and sit on my porch than it is to buy
That's
one.
That's my biggest
round.
Complaint about Wrigleyville. It's gotten so expensive up there.
Really on game has. Days, the crazy thing is on game days, it really is expensive. But then you can go there on the day before a game, and it's great.
And they jack up the prices for concerts, too, don't they?
Well, that's a rumor.
Yeah. All right, we got to wrap it up. This is a great show. Thank you all for participating.
Thank you very much.
Will, can people see your artwork? You want to give a plug?
Yeah, it'd be great. Follow me on Instagram or Twitter, at Will Byington, WILLBYINGTON, or just willbyington.com has a bunch of my photos. So Will Byington. Twitter, Instagram, willbyington.com.
And Steve, how long is Dan Whitaker playing tonight?
Oh, he'll be playing till about 1:15 tonight.
Okay, yeah. All right. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Katrina. Nice seeing you.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
We'll see
you.
Thanks to Dan Long, Aubrey Mumpower. We'll see you all next week at the Nocturnal Journal.